taking me serious when I tell you don't check your brain in at the door to participate in the next step? Well, you should, because I mean it. This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church. We're going to connect those dots that don't go outside of the logic sphere today on this 413th episode of The Next Step.
Hi, this is Susie from epostle.net, welcoming you, our worldwide community, to a new episode of The Next Step with Father Voskin. The next step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, as providing an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. And most importantly, you don't have to check your brain in at the door to follow Armedoxy. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Well, how do you do? It is so good to be here with you. Actually, it's good to be here in general. Yes, let me start off with that by saying thank you very much for all those kind expressions, your emails, your thoughts, your prayers. They go a long way. And from the bottom of our hearts, Susan and I, we thank you for all of those prayers. You know, we are feeling it. And last week when I shared with you about this horrific accident we had gone through, it still was brand new. I mean, we were still, like, in a sense, in a shock. I still am in many ways. We still can't believe it happened. And when you see the car, we had a chance to go back out and to the wrecking yard and see this car in an accordion mode, you know, just basically just smooshed up. Yeah, that's the word. Smoosh is just too gentle, isn't it, right? Anyway, it was like an accordion, if you could imagine. And it really was a miracle that we survived. And actually, it was really beautiful. Last Sunday, I asked Father Zavin to do the services at our church, and actually to give the sermon, actually. And he's a senior priest. Many of you know him or know that I've spoken about him. But he expressed something that it was very moving in his sermon, in his wishes to us. He said there was a third person in the car, and they were not alone. The Christ who was going to ascend, because actually today is Ascension Day. Today is Hampartzum. So he said, for 40 days, the risen Lord is in our midst in the Armenian Church. And certainly, along with Yeretskin and Derhar, there was a third person, and that was Christ. And, you know, you think about it, think about the story of Setrag Misak Apetnakov in the book of Daniel, chapter 3. We read about these three boys, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who are thrown into a fire, and yet they are not alone. Inside the fire, they look down and they see a fourth person who resembles the Son of God. And it was kind of nice when Derhar said it, when Father Zavin said it in the church. It just hit me that, yeah, we believe in all of these miracles, but it's time that we start believing it for ourselves. That, yes, God is walking with us. God is with us. He is seated with us. He is always with us once we trust him and we allow him to work the miracle of miracles. Anyway, I was very moved by his comments, as we are moved by all of your comments, your well wishes. Thank you so much. And it's going to take a little bit of time. We've been back and forth to doctors throughout this week. It's going to take some time, but with God's help, with your prayers, we're going to make it through, okay? Today, I'm going to be talking about quite a bit of stuff. Actually, why when that accident happened, we were on the way to a big event. It was Congressman Adam Schiff. He was going to be speaking about the situation in Armenia and Artsakh, and he was being introduced by my senior deacon at my church, Professor Richard Dekmejan, Herayr Dekmejan. And I shared with you some comments about him last week about how committed he is to the church. Anyway, he had a captive audience of like 300-400 people that evening. It was a relatively well-attended, high-roller event. And I do have his comments today. And the reason why I said high-roller, because he doesn't hold his punches. Dr. Dekmejian does not hold his punches, and he went after the bourgeois elite that day. And he said, you guys are going to be talking, and there's a lot of people with political agendas going to be talking, but I think this is more important, and you need to listen to it. Can you imagine? He said that. It was fantastic. What strength there is. Now, you got to remember, this happened. I wasn't there, unfortunately. This accident happened, and we weren't there. But through the miracle of technology, actually, some low technology, but it was fantastic that we had it. We got a chance to watch it later on in video format, and I've taken the video and converted it to sound files, so I'm going to be playing parts of Dr. Dekmejian's speech today, so you see why I'm so turned on to it. And if we can, we'll even include some of Congressman Schiff's comments in there. It was all very, very beautiful, very well done, and congratulate all the people involved in that. But Dr. Dekmejian, as I shared with you last week, is a unique sort because he comes from secular background as far as an educator. He comes from USC. And by the way, did you know that most educational places here in the higher educational institutions, such as Harvard, such as Princeton, the big ones, the Ivy Leagues, you know, these were all started off as means by which to propagate I don't want to say a religious ideology as much as a spiritual and a moral, ethical, let's call it, an ethical way of life. And so you have these divinity schools, and Dr. Dekmejian had come from a divinity school back east, but he now is, for the last 30 years, he's been a professor at the University of Southern California. And every Sunday, without exception, that I've known him, I've served in Pasadena for 6-7 years, in Glendale for 13 years, without exception, he is in church. And for the last 13 years, he's been the choir director at our church, with the exception of one Sunday that he missed, and that was because he was having breakfast with the King of Bahrain, you know. And I'll tell you another story about him, which I love telling this story because it just, I'm excited when I find people like this. It's just a beautiful expression of how faith has to work. Dr. Dekmejian is always called upon by CNN to give his analysis of what's going on. And one night during the Lenten season, I can't remember what was going on in the Middle East, something was happening, but during the Lenten season, they had called him to give his analysis. And he said, I'm sorry, I can't come. I have church services. Yeah, CNN. He said, I have church services. So I'll never forget this. Services had finished around 8 o'clock. We went outside, and they had one of those giant trucks with those big lights, and they had set up a small little portable studio outside so that when he exited the church, they could do the interview with him outside of the church. True story. Now, where does this happen, huh? You gotta stand up for your beliefs. You can't be scared of them. You gotta say, this is the way it is. You're coming to me. You want something from me? This is the way it is. I thought that was beautiful. Anyway, I hope you appreciate that story as much as I appreciate telling it all the time. It's one of my favorite stories about him. But anyway, in a few moments, I'm going to be playing some of his comments. But let me start off by going into my rants because this week happens to be the Diocesan Assembly, and because of our physical condition, we're not traveling. We were going to be going, and up until yesterday when the Archbishop actually just said, why don't you take it easy? And I certainly appreciate that, because the way we're feeling these days, it's hard to travel in long spurts like that to go out. But today, tomorrow, next day, happens to be the Diocesan Assembly. It's in Las Vegas, Nevada, where they're also going to be consecrating a new church for the Armenian community there. And there's all kinds of things going on. And this was an interesting little exercise that took place last week. Actually, it's been taking place for a few weeks, but last week it kind of came to a head in that some disgruntled people in the church were looking for an opportunity to express their dissatisfaction with the current administration. And so they took to Facebook and they started writing about it. And at first sight, I thought to myself, wow, you know, okay, here we are. We talk about this a means of changing things. How do you bring about change? Certainly the next step for the last 8 years, for the last 9 years that we've been doing these weekly podcasts, we've been struggling with those themes of bringing about change or the revolution, of finding that evolution and re-evolving and bringing it about, a new way of thinking, a new way of doing things. When we talk about the disenfranchised element of our community, we see it every day. We see it every week in church. We see more and more people are disenfranchised from the church. How do you bring them back? Well, bring them back is one thing, but on the other hand, at what point does leadership take responsibility for their disenfranchisement? And if they do take responsibility for it, then, well, what do you do at that point? You've got a problem there, right? Do you remove that problem? What do you do? How do you work within the system? How can you work within the system? And I've shared with you many times my own frustration because I do not want to work outside of the system. I completely believe in the Armenian Church. And even greater than that, I believe in the sanctity of the Armenian Church as being the body of Christ. And so you can't remove yourself and fight the battle from the outside. You've got to do it from within. And I guess last week it came to a head when a group of people were fighting it and they took to Facebook. And here's the thing that I at first I'm saying, okay, it's a legitimate means of expression these days. It's a legitimate way of grievance, of airing out your grievance, your problems, your difficulties, how you want to address them. And at some point I also got upset that it was being aired out in such a public forum. Not that, you know, you're scared of anything, but I was reading comments from people who aren't even connected with the church, saying things like, this is why I don't go to the church. This is why I don't go to church. Because things like this happen within the church. And I'm going, come on. This is not why you don't go to church. You don't go to church because you're lazy. You don't feel like going to church. You don't understand it. You don't care for it. It doesn't speak to you. There's a thousand reasons why you don't go to church. Don't give me this thing about, here, you know, I'm reading this disagreement in the church and this is why I don't go, you know? And that's, I think, when it hit me that, you know, we've got to come up with better solutions. We do need forums where these things can be discussed, but within the church life, within the group of people who have an opportunity to effectuate change. And this is why I stay within the church. I can't talk about these things outside of the church, right? You've got to be in the church. That's why it's important for me as a credential, the Father Voskint, a priest of the Armenian Church. That's why it's important when you listen to different people. Are they inside? Otherwise, you have the Protestant Reformation. That's what Martin Luther. Martin Luther was a priest of the Catholic Church, right? He went out. I don't think he ever intended a Protestant Reformation. He was trying to bring about change within. Well, you know what happened? All of a sudden, you've got 1,001 different Protestant denominations who can go back and say that our roots are right there at the point of the Reformation when Martin Luther broke off and presented his 95 theses. It's a difficult one. It's a difficult challenge. But I certainly, this week, I understood that, you know, Facebook is not a forum for these kind of things, nor are these public outcries on the internet, because they're interlaced with things that really don't matter. You know, different pictures of your last fishing trip. And then there's these big issues about what's going on with the body of Christ, but everyone's not on the same page as far as it being the body of Christ. For most people, they're seeing it as a little hangout where you do your church business and then you go on to something else. I mean, think about you as Next Step listeners, what you understand the church as. What do you understand the church as? And then think about what the general public understands. Where is your understanding of the church? Where is theirs? And it's basically an apples and oranges thing. And that's what I felt reading this stuff was, that you had some deep-seated concerns and a group of people ready to react and bring those concerns to form. And then on the other hand, you had, well, if that's your apples, you had your oranges, which were just basically, you know, what are you guys talking about? This is a church and it's governed by bylaws, not by a Christ. The church is governed by set rules and regulations. And to some extent, that's the institution that it is. And, you know, as much as I tell you about the hoopla, taking away the hoopla, and, you know, that rhetoric that I speak over here, at the end of the day, you got to remember that the church has its structure. It does have its discipline. And there is a code in there. Just like any other business. And business is not a bad word. Business merely means that you are organized to get your work done. That's what business means. Doesn't mean you're making money. It's not associated with money as it's commonly thought of as right now. You're running a good business means, oh, you're making money. No, good business means you're reaching your ends. You're doing your work properly and in an orderly, systematic fashion. And in that sense, the church is a business like any other. Just like the army has its generals, and you don't have your fighting men, your privates on the bottom level, telling the general which direction you're going to be going in. And if you want to do that, you need to rise up the ranks. And or in any corporation that has a CEO, the CEO sets the way that the corporation is going to be going. And you have the people on the bottom, so you have the middle management, upper management, you have your vice presidents, and you have different orders in there. And you move forward. Now, there's confusion in the case of the Armenian church because, well, for so many years, we've existed under different rules, different sets of circumstances. Like, for instance, the other day on the Etchmiadzin website, I noticed that they had used the expression the College of Bishops. There is no such thing in the Armenian Church. That's a purely Catholic, Roman Catholic idea. But they've adopted that idea because it conveys an idea. And so slowly we see that different metaphors, different language styles will start to evolve and will start taking place. And unfortunately, we don't have a place where we can check and balance this stuff. Talk about why shouldn't the expression College of Bishops be used. What is the extent that a bishop, what are the rights of a bishop? What are the rights of a Catholicos? Like, a Catholicos is not a pope. There's no papal infallibility, for instance, in the Armenian Church. Basically, the Catholicos is the chief bishop. That means when you have all the bishops together and they're going to be talking about matters of faith, the Catholicos sits as the chairman, so to speak, quote unquote, that he runs the meeting, that he's there. But now we're seeing different categories where you have Catholicoi, you have double-headed eagles, you have banages, and you have crosses that kind of say where everyone needs to sit, who needs to sit where, and who's who in the whole thing. So it's confusing. Does it mean we pull the plug? Does it mean we abandon it? No, as far as I'm concerned, I've through the ages, through the years, I have mellowed in that I understand that there is a process of evolution, and it does take time. Unfortunately, sometimes we don't have the patience for, just like Armenia. When you think about Armenia and you think about the oligarchs, you think about the corruption that exists in the country, I always think to myself, yeah, but it's a country that's had independence for what, 25 years? Look at America. The United States has had independence for 230 some odd years. You still got corruption, right? You still got a system that has left us with two people in all of the United States out of 300 million possible candidates. You've ended up with two people that you don't know who you want to vote for. You're looking at him and saying, what is the lesser of two evils? Can you imagine that? Yeah. Yesterday, the last Republican contender submitted his resignation or suspended his campaign and left us with Trump. Can you believe that? We started it off as a joke. He was a joke. Who would vote for him? Then we started saying, can you believe people are voting for him? Then he's getting to a place and he's saying, can you believe that people are voting to him for him for at that level that he's really, he's a legitimate contender. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, everyone's out of the race and he is the guy. It's happening. Unbelievable. Right? And this in a country that has been around for 237 years, I believe. Right? 1776. Oh, this is a big one. This is 240 years. Has been around. 240 years. And still, you got problems. It's not perfect. Human beings run it. So take a breath. In the same way, the church. When you allow human elements in there, you're going to have some problems with it. But that being said, you allow the Jesus element, you allow the God element to run it. You have to say, well, where's the spokesperson for that God? How is that God manifesting? Well, look around you. And it turns out that it is human beings. It is human beings. And that's where the power of prayer, that's where the faith in the Holy Spirit and its guidance, you have to have that. And so we come back down. It's almost begging the question. We're going to bring about change. It's got to start with us being the agents for God, the Holy Spirit, for Christ, being the body of Christ, being the mouth, the hands, the feet. And so, yeah, there's many ways that you can fight it. And some people want to fight it from outside, make a lot of noise. Several years ago, we resigned to the fact that if we're going to fight it, we have to become those special agents. And so we formed the Inner Shoes, walking in the shoes of others and finding a way of bringing about Christ's love vis-a-vis the church, but we as the agents who have read it, have been touched by Christ's miracles, and the miracle is touching us because he's riding with us. I'm going to take a break right now. I'm going to play you a song. I know you've been waiting for this one. We're going to come back and then listen to Dr. Dick Manchin, but right now, going to premiere a song. This is by Gorm Mkhitaryan. It's off of his newest album called Passport. It's not available. Don't go looking for it. Actually, In His Shoes has sponsored this album. It is going to be released May 29th of this year. That's in a few weeks. And if you are in the Los Angeles area, please, please, please plan on being with us. It's going to be a beautiful open-air concert at a private venue in Pasadena. It's just we're looking forward to it. Anyway, for the first time, get ready. You are listening to Gorm Mkhitaryan off of his newest album, Passport, song called Veratarts.
Traduzione, lave i hante sel Un eine job e ki pushin e parorel A sala hapak neri ne qei kënë të jev Pajtë darë me i datel U datat me ste Jartan karotit së artem në mi hivan Kriegt kein Schieds, das hat sich elagal. Ause zieh a lage, het wer a darnal. Weiß possimos in de livo morana. 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 Het hat das,
From Gor Mkhitaryan. That is called Veratharts. It is off of his newest album called Passport. And you can't get it today. It's going to be a while. If you want this album, got to wait a few more weeks. May 29th, it's going to be world premiered. And we are premiering it because In Issues, myself personally, we're the executive producers of this album. It is about frustrations in the world. It is about global situations. You're going to really like it. We'll be talking more about it in the weeks to come, but I needed to treat you Next Step listeners to this. And in lieu of the usual link that I put in our show notes of where you can get that album from, because it's not available. Did I say that already? Yes, because it's not available. In lieu of that, we'll have a link to the YouTube video. Really nicely done. I think you'll appreciate it. You get a chance to see it put together poetically to the music. Gor Mkhitaryan, the Passport album, coming out May 29th. And we'll be listening to more of his songs in the coming week. We might even have an opportunity to connect with him. We're really excited. If you happen to be in the Los Angeles area, there's going to be a concert debut. It's an afternoon on the green. It's going to be open-air concert, Gor Mkhitaryan, and he will be featuring the songs from his newest album called Passport. The second portion of our show I want to dedicate to some of the thoughts that were expressed by Professor Hrar Dekmejian at a rally or at a community forum that was organized 10 days ago at the call of the Archbishop. And the reason I want to share them is because they're so in line. Basically, they're armadoxy. He's explaining armadoxy and the power of Christianity in bringing about the changes that you're looking for. So this is not a secular lecture you're going to be listening to. You're going to be actually hearing some ideas about the implementation of faith. Yeah. And it's not a faith that it's not with 2016, but about how to take the past and implement it today in our lives. So it's pretty wild. Like I said, that evening, unfortunately, we were involved in this horrific accident and unable to attend it live, but it gave me the opportunity to have this recorded version of it. It's available as a speech, but I immediately asked Ken to rip it into an MP3, and we've got an MP3. So that's what I'm going to be sharing with you, is portions of it, excerpts from it. And I think it's imperative that we understand, we have a grasp of what's going on over there, because it does affect everyone else. We are living in a global community right now where everyone's pain is basically somehow connected to the other person. So when we talk about in issues, about connecting dots, we are really expressing the global environment, the global situation. And globalization is, like it or not, it's right there. You can't escape it. One man's pain is also your pain. Your pain has to be the pain of everyone else. And once we start understanding this, we start living in that global community as brothers, as sisters. Right now, we're living at different relationships, sometimes as enemies. And what's happening is really you have this conflict that's going on in life, because the circumstance that you're living in is conducive for that global lifestyle. But you yourself have not arrived at that place. So most of the time, we're living in an unbalanced situation, right? And think about it. Again, go back to your basic science. What does it tell you? The chaotic situation will seek its equilibrium. All things are seeking that equilibrium. You know it's right. You want to seek that equilibrium, but you can't, because you don't have the language skills. You don't have the proper means of understanding that globalized society. And that's all the world is right now. We are really at the crossroads of the old and the new. We're looking at life and we're saying that we deserve something better. We have educated ourselves. We live in a 21st century. We have the technology to really do all that we need to do with this world. There shouldn't be poverty. There shouldn't be hunger in this world. We have the technology, but we're not implementing it. And we're living in this Stone Age mentality. I mean, as Armenians, I'll talk for myself. Okay, as Armenians, I grab the newspaper, I'll read on the internet about what Armenians are up to. Do you know that we wasted our time again by seeking validation from other people? There's a classic picture, if I can, I got to make a note of this. I want you to see it. There's a supervisor, county supervisor here in the Los Angeles area, Los Angeles County. He awarded everybody from the community an award. What's the award for? Recognition of the Armenian Genocide. His name is Antonovich. I'm so happy that this clown is going to be out of office next year. Unfortunately, he wasn't voted out, but he's term limited out. Okay, he's finished. His term is finished. Well, one way or another, at least he's going to be out. But you look at this picture, and God bless these people. They're looking for recognition for the Armenian Genocide, and they find this supervisor who has basically pleased them. He's giving them what they want. And you see the picture, and they're all holding these awards. And it occurs to me that as Armenians, our entire being, our entire self-definition, self-understanding is based on this genocide that took place. Namely, we are basing our being on an event that happened not at our will, but at the will of the Turks. So we are defining ourselves by Turkish characters, by Turkish means, by Turkish will upon us. And hence we get into the whole victimization, which I've spoken oodles about. We got to stop being victims. We're not. I'm not. We're not victims of the genocide. There was a group of people, much braver than I'll ever be, who stood up, who walked through the Syrian desert. 1.5 million people were slaughtered. They were the victims. Yes, absolutely. They went through that. But now I have an opportunity to create my life. And I could look back and I could say, wow, that's too bad. Look at me. My wound is empty. My wound is open. Yeah, and it's empty too. And look at me. Woe is me. Or else I could look at it and say, look, you tried something. You failed. Look at me right now. Because I'm doing something not only for myself, I'm doing something for that globalized world. Because of what I went through, I now have an obligation to put my feet in the shoes of others and walk in their shoes, to understand their pain and to help out that pain. And that's basically where we come from, right? And that begins with our understanding of God, the essence of God, Jesus Christ. And so it's with that we're going to be listening to Professor Dekmejian right now. The first part of this little clip, it'll be the first voice you hear, will be attorney Mark Garagos. He's going to be introducing the professor. I'm actually going to clip to just the final words that he says about him because I think it's important. It gives a preface to the professor's comments. And then we'll switch over and get some excerpts from his comments. So, listen up.
And is one of the most remarkable men that I've ever met, and remarkable on a couple of levels. Herar is probably the go-to person, most published, most revered in the world on the situation in the Middle East. His bibliography, his publications are legendary, sought after. But I think one of the most impressive things about Herar is that he could have really cashed out. And what do I mean by that? 31 years ago, when he came to USC, he had the opportunity, and he's had contracts over the years working for various intelligence agencies, including ours, and has always been sought out for his ability to prophetically see what's going to happen and learn from the history and predict in the future. I can confidently tell you that 31 years ago, everything that he was telling me that would unfold in the Middle East has unfolded almost uncannily. And when I say he could have cashed out, he could have gone to work in a public institution or a think tank or something else and just coined money. And that was never his interest. And Anush, I think, will back me up on that. He decided he was going to come here, and basically out of scratch, he created the USC Institute for Armenian Studies. And I don't know how many people know that how tirelessly he worked to put that institute together, and I can proudly say, even as somebody who's not a USC alum, that that institute is now recognized worldwide as the place, the crux, if you will, for Armenian studies. And it's all due to the untiring efforts of Herar Dekmejian. So without further ado, I invite you to come out.
At the Archbishop's call, we gather here together in this somber community forum on the day after the 101st anniversary commemoration of the Armenian Genocide and 23 days after Azerbaijan's barbaric aggression on Artsakh, that is Nagorno-Karabakh. We are congregated here to pray for our martyrs and also to objectively recall, to the extent we can, the Armenian condition during past millennia to the 1915 genocide and the damages caused by the Azeri deceptive onslaught with all their military might, but ending in their shameful retreat brought on by the brave sons of Artsakh. These events have deeply disturbed and angered Armenian souls while preparing for this year's genocide observance. However, such emotional feelings should not distract Armenians and their leaders in Artsakh, Armenia, and diaspora from thoughtful analysis and systematic strategizing in order to prepare their defensive and offensive policy priorities in the months and years to come. We have seen the disasters caused by policies of leaders throughout the centuries that have resulted in hundreds of mistakes and blowbacks, harmful to policymakers and humanity itself. I wish to humbly propose several policy suggestions for Armenian leaders and their constituents to consider and try to implement, limiting their time of speech making, because these, I think, are more important. Among those that are imperative necessity are systematic studies of the Artsakh Armenia versus Azerbaijan balance of power in weaponry, air power, military intelligence technology, and dynamics of deep border penetration. Number two, another imperative, is to reinforce Artsakh's position in the military balance of power in the context of more geostrategic considerations and with substantial funding from the diaspora. Number three, Armenia and diaspora communities should intensify diplomatic efforts to attract and strengthen support from allies and friendly countries such as the United States, Russia, Iran, France, Germany, Italy, and even Israel and some Muslim states, without blindly relying on them in times of massive future Azeri attacks that could constitute existential threats to Artsakh and to the Armenian Republic. Number four, Armenian delegations should include representation from both Armenia and Artsakh itself. And although they need to be flexible to make concessions for peace, they should be very careful in reaching compromise settlements with Azeris through international organs or through presidents like Putin, Obama, Rouhani, Holland, etc., and to make sure to guarantee in such agreements defensible, demilitarized borders with many multinational inspectors there 24 hours. Indeed, in negotiations, we should not forget that we live in a global and regional milieu full of pathological leaders and contagions of genocidal ideologies and thousands of their practitioners. Number five, to maximize their stability and security of Artsakh and Armenia, we need the partial de-bourgeoisization of Artsakh's and Armenia's political and economic systems. In reforms, to share the wealth. I know that quite a few of us don't like that in our American capitalist system. But if you want to know, all you have to do is that we can have you, Senator Bernie Sanders, and he'll tell you how to do it. And that means that if you do those things, you have a longer survival life. If you don't do those things, there'll be trouble wherever you are, including this country itself. Six, we need to substantially increase the populations of Artsakh and Armenia by a formula of three portions: funding, patriotism, and faith. because this is done, should be done in several ways, so that we can reverse the expatriation of poorer families by creating job opportunities for them. And then to enlarge families with economic support for a higher birth rate, for higher birth rates, more babies. And number three, start very aggressively campaigns and provide incentives for diaspora Armenians to return to their homeland. This learning from, I think the congressman will understand me, Aliyah. Aliyah was the mechanism, the faith by which the immigration of Jews to Palestine and later Israel dramatically increased. Because in the old Ben-Gurion days, there are very few people, relatively speaking. And that's not the way you build a state. Clearly, number seven, Armenians, therefore, and I could go on and on, but I won't waste your time because I have to get too technical and I need a board with formulas. Number seven, clearly, Armenians need a miracle. A belated unity of all Armenian organizations on this planet. And you know that's not easy. And number eight, the epicenter of this miracle has to be the Armenian Church. Tears came to Armenian eyes when we saw the Katholikoi Karekin of the Holy See of Echmiadzin and Aram of the Great House of Cilicia going together to the Karabakh front to console, to bless, and encourage the Artsakh fighters and their families. The two supreme leaders of the Armenian Church quickly witnessed the flowing spiritual dynamics of Karabakhis. From children to soldiers, many of them in hospitals, wounded, old veterans and women. This was the persistent outpouring of their religious beliefs, combined with a powerful Armenian identity. In projection of fighters' confidence, Artsakhis manifest, and I noticed that for the first time, more profound commitment to the ancient faith of the Armenian people, what Father Vaskin has defined for many years as Armenian Christianity, based on a unique Christian national identity to drive the Armenian spirit of survival as it has done for centuries in an ever dangerous world, particularly in the Middle East and the Caucasus. Why should the church take the lead in Artsakh, in Armenia and beyond? Because the church is the only power, the only institution that can provide the Artsakhis with shenor, grace, charis in biblical Greek, both on and off the battlefield. Divine grace which they desperately want more urgently. That's our soldiers, especially our Artsakhi soldiers. They want it more urgently than they want military, economic, and medical help, which they desire. But their first interest is that powerful faith of what we call Armenian Christianity. As we saw them on television the fighters, their families, commanders, the blessed Archbishop Barkev Martirosyan and his brave clergymen at the front. They represent, these are the represent, the holy successors of their forebears who were prompted by this charis, this shnor, the grace, to fight and sustain Armenia's survival throughout the centuries. Yes, the Artsakh fighters are the successors of a whole batch, which I will very briefly cover, of fighters with clerics who sustained Armenians throughout the centuries. Number one, of course, General Vardar Mamigonian, his chaplain, Levon Yerets, and 60,000 martyrs who fought at Avarayr in 451 AD. They fought the Persian armies, Zoroastrian Persian armies. By refusing to give up their Christian faith, but soon after that martyrdom, Armenians led by General Vahan won and preserved their faith by the Nuvarshak Treaty of 489 AD. Defeat changed into victory. We may also cite several recent precedents to inspire our Artsakh warriors. A century ago, Armenian genocide survivors sought to establish a new Armenia. What a dream. 1918 is a crucial date. The battle of Sardarabad against Turkey to defend our new republic. As church bells and clerics led by Archbishop Karakin Hovsepian, later Catholicos, inspired the people and called them to join the fight and turn the tide to victory. In the same year, 1918, the Battle of Arara, the mountain near Jerusalem, where Armenians escaping the genocide and helped by the Jerusalem Patriarchate, joined Marshal Allenby's forces, British forces, to volunteer and fight the Ottoman Turks. The battle was won, as 28 Armenian soldiers had fallen and were buried as martyrs at the Jerusalem Armenian Patriarchate. In 1922, self-defense of Aintapsi Armenians, where my mother came from, led by Father Nerses Tavukcian and the British officer Abur Levonian and the famous Dashnaktitun leader of Aleppo, saving the residents and transferring of Aintab and transferring them Aleppo through the French military help. More notable, however, was the pioneering victory of Artsakhis against the Azeri hordes in the Liberation War of 1992-1994. Yet there is one historical event to trace this mystical early foundations, the roots of Artsakhi's unique psycho-spiritual character. In 430 AD, the creator of the Armenian alphabet, Saint Meshrop Mashtots, came to Artsakh and established the first school there to study the Bible with new letters that he had created, which sustained them, the Artsakhis, for 17th centuries until today. No wonder Artsakhis are among the earliest practitioners of what we call Armenian Christianity. Unlike many of us with bourgeois lifestyles, Artsakhis practice what they preach in their faith as they proudly pray, recite, and sing about their mission based on that type of religious drive. To fight, they say, Vasan Habado Yev Vasan Hayriyat. Their fight for our faith and for our fatherland. To sacrifice themselves, they call it Amma Panim Spasargu Horut Horim Im Hayasta. As servants of the everlasting word, that's the divine word, and the profound mystery of our Armenia. To praise the mystery of the Armenian Church, the birthplace of souls. And then I'm reminded of what those beautiful children sang. Vahantekeans Yegevetsin Haigagan. The Armenian Church, the birthplace of souls. The Armenian Church, the clinging bells of which and hymns, do you see, bring us victory. The tragedy that befell Artsakh and the martyrdom of innocent Artsakhis is a wake-up call for all of us, for them and our friends, countered by the Artsakhi fighters' brave resistance, triggered by their religious faith and support by the solidarity of the Armenian people. Artsakhi's profound faith in Armenian Christianity has been their medium of salvation, what Erickson would call, as it should be that of Armenian communities just emerging from the sorrow of yesterday's commemoration of the Armenian Genocide. I thought that the Armenian Church and its leadership takes the lead in making plans to reach out and reinforce Artsakhis' dynamic faith and help them in every way to assure their survival now and for generations to come.
This is from a talk at a community forum that took place on April 25th, and it was called at the wish of His Eminence Archbishop Hovnan Derderian. It was an opportunity for the community to come and hear first an analysis by Dr. Dekmejian and later the words of Congressman Adam Schiff. I wanted to play it for you. I also wanted you to have a record of what we go through and the importance of understanding that faith really can move those mountains. I want to come back and tell you about what's coming up this weekend, okay?
This is Susie for In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. This means we must avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at epostle.net. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
thank you very much for your support, for your kind expressions that you send throughout the week. And thank you, Susie, for that message. You know, last weekend, we had our Mother's Day celebration, commemoration in Glendale at our parish, St. Peter Armenian Church Youth Ministry Center. And it was a very, very nice event. I just enjoyed it, being with family and friends. And we have a tradition of naming a woman of the year. And this year, we were ready to send out the ballots. It's kind of a cool little tradition because you can't run for this position. It's the peers, the women who are in the Ladies Society, which we call the Maidens. This group selects among their ranks. So you basically cannot run for this position of being woman of the year. And it's more meaningful, too, because it's given by your peers. So every year we select somebody. This year, it was April 1st when I was going to send out the ballots, which are done secretly. And then I tally them and name the Woman of the Year at this Mother's Day event. And this year, it was April 1st. I was ready to send out the ballots, but it was the weekend, and I think we were going to wait till the Monday. And sure enough, on Saturday, the Azeris had attacked Artsakh, and by Sunday, we were at the church service in utter dismay of what that today these things could happen, and really on the brink of a new genocide. And thank God that we had those brave people in Artsakh. We have people all around the globe who stood up and said no. But, you know, the Azeri violence, if it didn't happen that day, it'll continue, because these are basically barbaric people who continue their same patterns. They basically have other... It's the apple and orange, what I was talking about earlier, okay? Different way of looking at life. So I hesitated on sending those ballots, and then I didn't, because it occurred to me that as we look for Woman of the Year, there really is a woman who really deserves to be Woman of the Year, and that is a woman who has been mother of us as Armenians, and that's Mother Armenia. And so at the event, I announced that quite to a surprise of everybody, and I asked everyone to stand up, and we sang the national anthem of Armenia, which begins Mer Hayrenik. Interesting, right? We celebrate Mother Armenia, but we start off our fatherland. So it's a nice play of the parent, right? There's a motherland, there's a fatherland, and Mother Armenia. Anyway, we sang it, and it was very moving. Just to hear the voices of Armenians today in Glendale, to be able to recognize as a mother the one from whose soil we all come. Yeah, think about that for a moment. The cradle of civilization. That's where we all come from, that place, not just Armenians. You look at the story of Genesis, at the Garden of Eden. You look at science and anthropology, where man came from, human beings came from. You want to believe in floods. Where does the ark land? Okay, there it is. Mother Armenia. That's the land. That's where we all come from. All of humanity begins over there. Even the Eve, that remember there was the Descent of Eve, early anthropological work about the first women in Africa, in the continent. Again, they come through that very special land in the migration of the species. You have people settling in that land. So it's a very sacred land in many, many, many ways. So this weekend happens to be Mother's Day. It's an opportunity to really think about what gives us definition. It can be a motherland. To me, it's in many ways connected with my mother church. My church is my faith, and my ethnicity is defined by a land and a culture. Together, they really combine together to make this crazy combination. It really keeps us crazy and on our toes. But each of us is called to this life with a combination of different elements. We are not just, you know, we don't just pop out of nowhere. and mother is beyond just somebody who physically feeds us her breast milk or gives or takes care of us and potty trains us and gets us to the point of being independent and sending us off on our ways, packing our lunch and then marrying us to our spouses. But mother is somebody who defines us. Defines us in who we are and our characteristics and the things that we do. Now, so with that being said, celebrate motherhood this weekend in a very different way by acknowledging the mothers that you do have, not just the physical, not just the biological mothers, but the many mothers who define who you are. And I say this every year when I congratulate people on Mother's Day. It's never been a gender issue, especially, I guess, because of the times that we've grown up in, right? It's never been a gender issue. We have men who are much better mothers than women. Just as on Father's Day, I always congratulate women who've had to do fathering because the man has been absent. So it's about the love, that mother's love. And of course, you can make up all the stories that you want that Mother's Day is created, fabricated by Hallmark and the sale of cards. But who cares? It's a nice tradition, right? Actually, in the early church, there was what was called the Mothering Sunday, where everybody on that particular Sunday would go to the church where they were baptized, because that is your mother church. Yeah, early Christian tradition called Mothering Sunday. You would go to the church where you were baptized, because you were baptized into the church. That's your spiritual mother. For us now, 2016, Mother's Day is just a beautiful opportunity to say thanks to the mothers, to the special people in our lives, but also to reflect on the idea of motherhood and who we are, the definition of what we see ourselves and what others see in us. So with that, I want to wish all the best to all of our mothers, irrespective of gender, but people who have given so much of themselves to others that they have earned the right to be called mothers. You know who you are. God bless you. I also want to say a very special prayer for our Armenian church, which I think is a very special mother that goes underrated. Underrated in many ways, because even the secular, which is growing by day and by night, the secular group has just basically pushed the church to one side and has marginalized it and has said, forget it. And that's why I wanted to play for you today Dr. Dekmejian's thought, to understand that to be religious doesn't mean you check your brain in at the door. It means you think about it. You think about the things in life, and there are so many possibilities when you open up your life to the power of God. I'm going to end it with that. I hope you enjoyed today's show. We will be back next week. And as I promised you, we're going into another format. I don't know how it's evolving, but we're just trying to find some time to put it all together. Please keep us in your prayers. Please donate. Donate often and be a sponsor of this show. You can go on our website at inissues.org, press on the donate button, always earmark it for electronic ministry, and we'll make sure that those funds go to this specific podcast and all the work that we do on the internet. And one final call out again for the Gore concert coming up May 29th. Put it on your calendar. I'll have a link on today's show notes. You can check it out, and you can make sure that you go down there and reserve your spot. It's going to be open seating on the green. Isn't that cool? Yeah, bring your blanket. It's going to be barbecue, Americana style. It happens to be Memorial Weekend. All right, for the wonderful crew who put today's show together, for Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your broadcast out.